Do you know where your inner child is? In pop psychology, there is something called the inner child. The innocent little critter wasn't taken very care of by its parents. It didn't receive enough love or attention, or too much of the wrong kind of love and attention. One thing that almost every inner child has in common is that it was surely abused. Because it was weak and powerless, the poor creature got all confused about things. It grew up unable to cope with life, or love, or liquor, or relationships, or work, or happiness, or crowds, or success, and so on. As the crowning achievement of making victimhood fashionable, the inner child's continued capacity is testimony that whatever is wrong with us is someone else's fault. The main problem with parents is they tend to be human. They make mistakes, sometimes terrible mistakes. But even when they don't, it doesn't require much effort for their grown children to isolate any number of little crimes that add up to a psychological felony. Figuring out how to blame our parents for our own failures is about as difficult as smiling when we're happy. This said, there is surely a connection with how we think and cope and behave with the way we were raised. At one level, every grown-up is the adult child of a sometimes childish adult. It helps to understand this, to sort it out, to unpack our resentments and recognize their source. It helps to learn to isolate and address unhealthy patterns. This is healthy, but not if we take it too far. Not if we are tempted to cultivate victimhood as one's own self-image, wallowing from one self-help book or workshop to another, beguiled by the rhetoric of codependency, locked in resentment, sharing only pain. As originally coined, the idea of codependency is useful. We can become passive accomplices to active abuse, trapped in patterns of behavior that diminish both us and those closest to us. Sometimes, with the best of intentions, we get so tangled up in another's thicket that neither of us can get out. But there is a problem with this terminology. In a larger sense, codependency is descriptive of the human condition. The noble term for this is interdependence, a word we find in our principles. That simply means that all of us, by virtue of family ties or some other form of proximity, are codependent on one another. We are codependent on one another for love and support, for comfort and human warmth, for all that is good as well as all that is bad between us. One danger is our fear of other people. We fear they're having a harmful impact upon our own freedom and happiness. We first set up exaggerated and unrealistic models for what a healthy relationship should be. Then we hold ourselves apart from others, not give our hearts away lest they be broken, not risk the pain that comes with every form of human companionship. As the English poet John Donne wrote, "No one is an island entire of itself. Every one of us is a part of the continent, part of the main. Every one of us." Not only do we depend on one another, but in a religious sense, we are actually part of one another. at some profound level, all true joy is shared joy. All true pain is shared pain. Therefore, in the time remaining to me, I would like to address the dangers of one solution to the problem of codependency. This solution comes with a noble predicate. This solution comes with a noble pedigree out of our own religious tradition. Ralph Waldo Emerson's essay, Self-Reliance. However, I should warn you that Emerson's compass is far broader than mine is this morning. Emerson's essay is a call to 19th century Americans to wake up, to think and act and create for themselves, to shuck off the tired, derivative, and dusty reliance of European arts and letters and faith. To see the world anew with new eyes, and I quote from his essay, learn to detect and watch that gleam of light which flashes across our minds from within, more than the luster of the firmament of bards and sages. Now, this is a fine piece of writing, an eloquent appeal for original thought and endeavor. Yet between the lines, Emerson calls for redemption through estrangement. I quote again, society everywhere is a conspiracy against the humanity of every one of its members. I shun father and mother and wife and husband and brother and sister when my genius calls me. Do not tell me, as a good man did today, of my obligation to put all the poor people in good situations. Do not tell me, as a good man did today, of my obligation to put all poor people in good situations. Are they my poor? Honor, he writes later in the essay, is self-dependent, self-dependent, self-derived. When good is near you, when you have life in yourself, it is not by any known or accustomed way. You shall not discern the footprints of any other. You shall not see the face of humanity. You shall not hear any name. Fear and hope are alike beneath it. The soul raised over passion beholds identity and eternal causation, perceives the self-existence of truth and right, and calms itself with knowing that all things go well. Now, these are beautiful words, but they lead directly to Emerson's most chilling point. Why should we assume the faults of our friend or wife or father or child because they sit around our hearth or are said to have the same blood? Not for that will I adopt their petulance or folly, even to the extent of being ashamed of it. Friend, client, child, sickness, fear, want, charity, all knock at once at thy closet door and say, come out unto us, but keep thy state. Come not in their confusion. No one can come near me but through my act. So much for codependency. Welcome to counterdependency, the perfect answer to every codependent estrangement and complaint. Emerson puts it this way. Discontent is the want of self-reliance. It is infirmity of will. Our sympathy is justice base. We come to them who weep foolishly and sit down and cry for company, instead of imparting to them truth and health in rough electric shocks, putting them more in communication with their own reason. This may be the first proclamation of tough love. After all, Ralph Waldo Emerson was one of the first self-help writers. What he had to say is helpful, Don't coddle another's weaknesses. Find a way to aid others that will not feed their own weaknesses but add to their strengths. I have no problem with that. My problem is with Emerson's conclusion. Nothing can bring you peace but yourself. This is very American, quite Unitarian, very male, and immensely troubling. Self-reliance based on the gospel of sovereign individualism may offer a perfect cure for codependency. It may even liberate the inner child from all its shackles. But it also estranges us from the ground of our shared being, a ground that is watered by tears, tears which help us grow in forgiveness, mutual understanding, and love. To an extent, we can choose. We can choose to be a part of or apart from the human race. Despite Emerson's confidence, though we may try to free ourselves from everything which limits us and sometimes drags us down, this can only be done at the expense of our humanity. Thomas Merton, a Catholic monk and mystic, reverses Emerson's frame. He links self-help with help to others. He puts our failures and successes in a larger perspective, one not of blame, but of the natural imperfections of human community. Merton writes, it's a little long, but it's worth listening. I recommend him. It is of supreme importance that we consent to live not for ourselves, but for others. When we do this, we will be able, first of all, to face and accept our own limitations. As long as we secretly adore ourselves, our own deficiencies will remain to torture us with an apparent defilement. But if we live for others, we will gradually discover that no one expects us to be as gods. We will see that we are human, like everyone else, that we all have weaknesses and deficiencies, and that these limitations of ours play a most important part in our lives. It is because of them that we need others, and others need us. Only when we see ourselves in our true human context, as members of a race which is intended to be one organism in one body, will we begin to understand the positive importance not only of the successes, but of the failures and accidents of our lives. My successes are not my own. The way to them was prepared by others. The fruit of my labors is not my own, for I am preparing the way for the achievement of another. Nor are my failures my own. They may spring from the failure of another, but they are also compensated for by another's achievement. May we have the wisdom and compassion to seek the ground of our shared being, a ground that is watered by tears, tears which help us grow in forgiveness, mutual understanding, and love. For no person is an island unto themselves, but instead a part of the human race. Where hate rules, let us bring love. Where sorrow joy. Let us strive more to comfort others than to be comforted, to understand others than to be understood, to love others more than to be loved. For it is in the giving that we receive, and in pardoning that we are pardoned.